Kind of fast, kind of not. Either way, always running or talking about it. Welcome to the Kind of Fast podcast, powered by Upward Running. Let's get into it.
Welcome to the socially distanced seventh episode of the Kind of Fast podcast. I am Travis Vaughn. I'm sitting here with Claire in the hot seat today, in the host seat, I should say. Claire is here with me. When we first started this planning this week, I'm not sure she was going to be, but Claire, how are you?
I am doing much better now. I sound not so great, but that's okay because I feel a lot better than I sound. So every little bit counts. I woke up yesterday with no fever. And praise the Lord for that.
Last week, our topic was about pushing through and then when to call it. And last week when we recorded this, I was pushing through a little bit. I felt off, but not sick yet. But about 2 hours in after the podcast, I definitely felt sick. I took a hard hour and a half nap that afternoon and the next day tested positive for COVID. And I am so sorry, Claire. I'm probably the person who gave it to you. If you can hear COVID being passed through on to someone else, then our 45 minutes of a podcast last week was probably me doing that with you, because that's the only time we spent together last week. So I'm so sorry, Claire, for that.
You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But to be fair, both kids were sick as well. So who's to say it was really you?
Yep. That's I appreciate that there. So when we were putting together the episode this week, we didn't know if you'd be good to go. So I said I'd step up and do the host seat for today. So I'm just holding down the host seat for 1 week. Claire will be back guiding us along starting next week. And that'll be a much better situation for the listeners, I'm sure. So let's talk about today's episode. I'm excited about it because I'm hoping we can keep it on our normal time frame. I know it's going to be tough here. But today we're going to be talking about cornerstone training principles of upward running. These principles should be most important to all runners out there, whether you're with upward running or not. We're also going to unpack what the term tempo means, plus talk a little bit about the U.S. track championships, since that just happened this past weekend. But like I've said in the past, we are not the coaches or even the faces of upward running. That is a guy named Mitchell Hollis and Dean Thompson. And I'm so excited to say they're both joining us today for these topics. So let me start with you, Mitchell. You're the upward running director. Welcome to the Kind of Fast podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
And then we also got our national running coach, Dean Thompson, with us. He's the one you hear advice from each week on how to handle different running specific things. Dean, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I am just right. And thanks for all the kind words you guys have shared over the past several weeks on the new podcast. I appreciate that.
That's great. Love that.
I need to say, we need a drum roll for the man and the myth, the legend, Coach Dean, because we talk about you every week, but now you're here.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So before we move too far into this, Mitchell, tell us who you are, who your family is, where you come from, what types of things you're involved with in Up and Running. Tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I was born and raised within 3 miles of where I live now in Dalton, Georgia. I'm married to my wife of 25 years, Holly Hollis. She swore she was never going to take that name before we married, but I won that battle. So we got two incredible boys, Lane and Landon, 22 and 19. My oldest son, Lane, just got married to Christian, so I've brought on a daughter-in-law in the past year. And a lot of people think I've ran my whole life, but I haven't. I didn't start running until 2006 when me and a couple of buddies signed up for the Peachtree Road Race. And some of us never ran again. And some of us, me being included, you know, caught a glimpse of something we really enjoyed. And so 2010 came along and started this ministry called Run for God. And you know, I thought it was going to be one class in my home church in Dalton, Georgia. And here we are, gosh, almost 16 years later. And we're now upward running as the podcast name suggests. And these programs, these training plans have been taught to over 200,000 people around the country over the past 16 years. And so what I do today, I basically just coordinate all the touch points where we've been busy building an app and creating content, the whole marketing side, working with you guys on the marketing and sales. And Dean and I are kind of moving into an advocacy role at this point of, you know, we've kind of got all the heavy lifting done with the merger. And so now it's time to really start getting the word out and getting members in here and drawing the parallels between this sport that we all love and a relationship with Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's great. You nailed that answer. I appreciate you letting our listeners know a little bit about who you are and what you're involved with. So, Dean, same question to you. Where are you from? Who's your family? What's your background in running? All that.
Well, I'm old, so I have grandkids. And we have a bunch of them. We've got seven of them. So we're, it's great. Grandkids are great. I'm just telling you, because, you know, you're supposed to spoil them and send them back, and it's great. So, three of those grandkids are adopted. And so that makes it even more special. And, so that's pretty cool. From a running standpoint, I've been a runner my whole life. I started running when I was a kid. Actually, we lived in a huge neighborhood, and I used to run in front of my mother's car to go to the post office, which was about a half mile from our house. And then I would run back. That was kind of my, and I don't know why I wanted to do it, but I did. And it has stuck with me ever since. And so I was a very successful runner in high school. I won 3 state championships in high school. That was a lot of fun. But then I worked in the floor covering industry for 25 years. And that was what I thought I was supposed to do, but God had other plans. I spent all of that time coaching my kid, a lot of that time coaching my kids once they were old enough to play sports. So I spent a lot of time coaching them in their sports. But then once they got into middle school and high school, I got back to running, which was actually, as I was just looking at it this morning, is almost exactly 20 years ago today, I started back to running seriously. And so as a runner today, I run every day. I've run every day for the last 14 years, except one. Missed one day in the last 14 years. I have been a successful coach at the middle school, high school, and college levels, 3 conference coach of the year awards in college. And added just 5 seasons at Dalton State College. So I have 2 passions, running and Jesus. And so when I met Mitchell and realized he had combined those 2 things, I was like, I want to be on board. If I can be involved in any way, you let me know. Well, he let me know. He brought me on. And here I am, 11 years later, still being a part of it. And I love it. I'm still competitive today. I'm hoping in October, I'm shooting for a national championship in the road 5K. So that's my goal for this year. So that's who I am.
Yeah, I love that. So Dean has coached at many levels in the past, at high elite levels through the college, and with his own training, I'm sure, pretty much self-coached on a lot of that, but has helped a lot of other runners go from zero to accomplishing things they could have never imagined as well. And that's both of your stories, no doubt about it. And so we'll get a little bit more into some of the principles that you guys instill as part of Upward Running as we move along here. But I thought, let's just take a moment and let you guys plug Upward Running for a minute, since you are moving into this advocacy role, which I love that word there, Mitchell. Tell us something that you're doing with Upward Running that other people might want to be involved with.
Well, actually, we were just on a meeting a few minutes ago with Travis, you and Claire and some of the marketing team that we're working with. And we were looking at the ads, and the number one ad right now is kind of really what I wanted to talk about, which is the Couch to Marathon. You know, Dean and I have talked about this. We're pretty sure we'd never heard that phrase before. We just kind of almost dared each other to do it back in 2021. And this whole idea, we were sitting around a meeting table one day, and I was going to run another marathon. I hadn't ran one in several years. And I said, well, you know, I kind of challenged everybody around the table to do it. And I said, well, why don't we just throw this out to Run Club? Run Club was about a year old at that point. And Dean and I thought, you know, maybe we'll get 8 or 10 people that would want to do this couch to marathon. I mean, that's pretty daunting, really. And that year we had over 1,000 people sign up to do the couch to marathon. And it really is. It's exactly what it says. It's taking people who may have never run or haven't run in years and taking them from the couch all the way to a marathon over 54 weeks. And like I said, it's something we've never heard of at the time, but it's become something that has been wildly successful. And it's a lot of fun to have a front row seat to people, see people do something. You know, we're all kind of wired that way. You know, when people say they are going to start running, what's the first thing they say? I'm going to run not a 5K, it's a marathon.
Go to the top.
Go to the top. And so it really has something that's caught on. And so we've done that for the past several Januaries. And starting this year, we're actually going to offer a few more. We've got one starting September the 29th. Correct me if I'm wrong, Claire. So we're going to try 3 different points over the next 12 months of start dates and different finish dates at different locations. You can finish wherever you want in the country, but we're all going to be at on the East Coast, the West Coast, and the Gulf Coast to finish at these particular destination races. So you can come join us at those races. So, yeah, I mean, our next big kickoff is September the 29th. If you're listening to this and you've ever thought, dreamed about running a marathon, we would love to have you.
That's great. Dean, anything you want to bring up, that's going on with Upward Running?
Well, Mitchell brings up these programs that are kind of organized. You don't have to be part of an organized program to be part of Upward Running, to be part of Run Club. It's a great community. We have the app now, which easily gets you to things like the podcast every week, as well as all the training plans we have at every level, from a beginning level to an advanced level for 5K, 10K, half marathon, and marathon. We have thousands of videos in our archives for you to look at. I've written, 500 different stories of Dean's thoughts. And don't forget, we also have Thursday night. So I don't know anywhere else in the world where you can pay $10 a month and get access to a coach. But you can do that through Upward Running. And so everybody ought to be a part of it. Everybody ought to be a part of Run Club. It's the best bargain you'll find anywhere.
Yeah, to have that direct relationship with a coach that's done it at your level, $150 to $200 a month, pretty common. So $10 a month with us, quite a bargain. And if you're coming from a place where you're just getting started, you know, Upward Running has trained so many people in the same situation, you know, be a great thing to be a part of with us as well. So about to move on to the next segment. Claire, you got anything else for us there?
Yeah, just one more thing before we forget. I want to kind of plug our church groups as well. So we also have the Upward Running church groups where you can lead a 5K challenge in your church. Now, this program is set up more for beginners, and it'll take you 12 weeks through, coming off the couch, barely able to make it to your mailbox, to completing your first 5K. So that's really cool. We've got several church groups meeting right now and several more on the way. But that's that. Let's move on to our next segment. Drum roll. I don't have a table in front of me. I can't do a drum roll today. And that is, what does that even mean? And this segment is for advanced runners and new runners, because to be very transparent, I've had to look some of this stuff up too. Our term for the day is tempo.
Yeah, tempo is a term that I'm glad we got Mitchell and Dean on the podcast to help us break down, because it's one, even for a long time, multi-decade runner for like myself, it's hard to just recall what that means. And so if you've ever heard someone say tempo effort or tempo workout or those types of things. That's what we're talking about here. So I know personally that this is a term used in our upward running training plans. I have seen it there myself. And I thought, let's break down what that means. So Dean, let's start with you. When you hear the term tempo, what does that mean?
Well, I think it's important to understand that the word tempo means different things to different people. But they're all similar for our training plans and what I use it as, and also what is probably the most prevalent use of the word is it refers to what we know as our anaerobic threshold. And that's the point at which you start to change the energy system you need to do a thing. So if you think about sprinting, if you sprint all out, you can't continue to do that for a long period of time. At some point in time, your body just breaks down and you can't keep going. Well, the reason why you do that is because the energy system that it takes to sprint is one that will not last long enough. When you run long distance, you're using an energy system that allows you to continue to go and go and go. The anaerobic threshold is the point directly in the middle of that. It's the point at which what we call lactate starts to gather in your muscles, which is the waste products of that sprinting anaerobic running that you do. And so tempo pace is just below that pace. And the idea is that when you run tempo pace and you do that for a period of time, it pushes that anaerobic threshold further out so you can run faster for a longer period of time. And so that's what it is. The purpose of tempo work, again, is to get you to the point where you can comfortably run faster.
Best explanation I've ever heard. That's well done, Dean. I like that. So, Mitchell, where would we see a tempo workout in our training plans? Like what point of the year or when would we prescribe something like that?
Yeah, let me back up just a second. I love that the name of this segment is What Does That Even Mean? Because this is where Dean and I really play well together with each other, because Dean will give the very scientific, data-backed answer. And I look at him and I say, what does that even mean? And so usually I'm the one that kind of boils it down into what everybody can understand. And what I say about your lactic threshold is it's the point where you go from breathing heavy to out of control. And the purpose of the tempo run is to stay right. Some people call it the rivet. You know, you're running on the rivet. But, you know, we always talk about, you know, we have base periods, strength periods, speed periods, race prep. You know, typically you'll see the tempo in the strength period, even though I don't think it's technically a strength workout. I've always said that this is, Dean and I, we've debated the topic of tempo a lot. And I think it's, personally, I think it's one of the most important workouts, but not for the reasons you might think. It's a great speed builder, strength builder, like I've already said, but I consider tempo as one of the best character builders, because most people can run hard for a short period of time, and some people can run long, or they can run slow for a long period of time. This is where those two worlds meet. And to me, in my world, it's the hardest workout there is. And so for that reason, I would put it anywhere. Typically, we would put it kind of in the strength phase of a periodization plan. But to me, it's one of the best workouts you can have at almost any phase other than base, obviously. But it's truly a character builder.
Now, as a caveat there, as an athlete, a tempo run is not my favorite workout to see. They're hard. But to your point, right, Mitchell, I was just going through the upward running 10K plan. And when I saw tempo workout on there, I knew I was going to get tired real quick. But they're good. You know, they're really good.
I've done quite a few workouts. Well, let me rephrase. Dean has done quite a few workouts with me. I haven't done quite a few with him. But the only one I have ever called it quits on with Dean was a tempo workout.
Really?
And I remember going and sitting down, and Dean said, you're going to hate yourself tomorrow for this. And sure enough, I did. But it is. It's the hardest, you know, physically, yes, but mentally, it's just a drudge. But I'm convinced you have some of your most gains from a tempo workout, for sure.
I totally agree with that. I don't agree that it's the hardest workout. I don't even think it's close. I honestly think it's one of the easier workouts.
That's because you're fast.
That's because you've pushed that level down so far. The calculator just lets you just, you know, run on with it at that point in time.
It just feels easier than doing like 6 times 800. Just seems like it's so much harder to me because you have to run so much faster to get the results you're looking for. But I remember back in 2013, I had one of the best years I've ever had from a running perspective. I think I was 47 at that year. I won the Myrtle Beach Marathon that year, which came out of the blue, and I ran really well that year. And that year, my workouts consisted of 100% tempo runs. It's all I did the entire year. I never did any other track workout.
That's great. So lots of value in zone two running and tempo runs on top of it, wouldn't you say?
Yep. That's exactly right.
Another topic we've run into, and something else you mentioned, Mitchell, there about how tough it can be to do either the fast or the long slow. That's where some people who are new to the sport or haven't raced real hard a lot of times, some people will say, and I would affirm this, a hard 5K is harder than a marathon. And like your mind explodes if you don't know what that means, but that's what we're talking about there. Like an all out 5K can be much harder than a long, slow marathon when it comes to those kind of things. And that's, it's all a part of what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Definitely more intense.
All right, let's move on to the next segment and keep this thing on track here, because we got a lot more we want to cover here. So another really glad that we're doing this with Mitchell and Dean here this week as we move into the news section, because this one's going to be all about the U.S. Track and Field Championships, which was held last weekend in Eugene, Oregon. First off, let's find out who watched it or who at least saw the highlights.
I saw highlights because Travis told me about it.
So we got one watcher in Dean. Mitchell?
Yeah, I caught the highlights.
There you go. You got some highlights. You got some highlights from Claire as well.
I saw every prelim, every final, every second.
So I watched everything that was on NBC across the 2 days. So Dean watched the most. I was second. We got some highlights from the other two. But I thought it'd be fun to talk through some of these things. Honestly, Dean and I could spend an hour breaking down all of these different races and what we thought was interesting, what storylines were unique and neat about the weekend. I decided I'm going to put together a few different headlines, and I'm going to go to you, Dean. Anyone else can jump in after. I'm going to give you three headlines here to start. You tell me which one is the most interesting. Tell our listeners a little bit about the race and why you find that headline interesting. So here are three headlines that I thought was interesting from the weekend. Number one, Melissa Jefferson Wooden wins both the 100 and the 200 for the females. Second headline, Noah Lyles wins the 200. Kung Fu Kenny Bignarek wins the 100, but the storyline is they've got some beef with each other after that 200 race. Or a third storyline, everyone's favorite, Sydney McLaughlin Lavroni wins the 400 flat, not the hurdles, here at the U.S. Track and Field Championships. What's the most interesting to you out of those, Dean?
I guess the most interesting, well, first, Melissa Jefferson's been on fire all year. There was no surprises to watch her. She's been a lot of fun to watch all year long. So I think she's going to win the world championships in the 100. That's how good I think Melissa Jefferson is. And then Sydney, again, no surprise that Sydney would win. I know it's not her event, but she has always done well in that event. I was frankly a little surprised she didn't break the American record, and I think she will break the American record. And it wouldn't surprise me if Marlite Paulino gets close to the world record when it comes to world championship times. So that'll be fun to watch. It'll be fun to watch those two go at each other, because I think we always knew nobody was going to beat Sydney in the 400 hurdles. There's a good chance she could get beat in the 400. So in the world championships, that's going to be the fun one to watch. But the of those three stories, I think the Noah Kenny thing is the biggest story. I just don't like the cockiness of Noah looking over at Kenny as they finished that 200. I didn't care for that. And then, of course, then Kenny goes out of his lane and pushes Noah, and they get into this little bit of an altercation. But then I think they both realize, well, I think Kenny realized at that point, oh my goodness, the TV cameras are on us. And he thinks, I need to do something to rectify this situation. So he goes over and puts his hand out to shake Noah's hand. Noah's not going to have any of it at that point. I think they've probably talked it all out by now. They have both had harsh words for each other in the past. So this is something that's been going on for a long time. But I think it's healthy. It's good that they settle things on the track, but I think that's something we miss in track and field. We expect everybody to be nice and cordial, but every other sport has their crazy people. And I think having crazy people in the sport is good for the sport. So I think this is good for the sport, and I think it's going to make the world championships even more fun to watch because those two guys will be going at each other again.
Mm-hmm. What is the world championship?
September.
Okay. Oh, that's soon.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing maybe about this is if you follow track and field at all, you know that the United States men have had a terrible time in the 4x100 meter relay for years. I mean, going back 25 years, they have had trouble with the 4x100 meter relay. They always have the best sprinters. They should win that event every time it's tried, but they don't because they drop the baton or they have poor handoffs or something like that. And I think this is why. I think you've got these guys that have these egos and they don't work well together. And so a team like Canada can beat the United States because they've got guys that get along and they work well together. And so this problem between Noah and Kenny is going to be interesting to see how it affects the 4x100 meter relay at the World Championships.
That's such a great point because you probably put Noah on the third leg since he's such a great turn runner, and you probably put Kenny in the final leg this year because he just won the 100 and was undefeated prior to that. He hasn't lost in the 100 all year. Yep. And what if they mess up the baton turn between three and four? Oh, that would be must-see TV right there.
Yes, it would.
That would be funny. All right, so love that you picked that one. It does bring more eyeballs to the sport. The 100 and 200, even though not my favorite races, are the ones that people, the casual track and field watcher watches more than the 5,000, which I would love for people to watch. But it'll be interesting to see how it goes with the world championships there. On to the next set of three storylines here. All right, so tell me. Yeah, go ahead.
Hold on just a second. First of all, Sydney, I think Dean and I have been talking about this for a while. I'm glad to see she's finally doing this, running the 400 flat out. That's going to be fun to watch. But to me, the best camera shot that I saw the whole event, I don't know if you saw the camera shot of Noah Lyles when Kung Fu Kenny won the 100. Did you see the camera on him?
No. Uh-uh.
It's like he was sitting there and he knew the camera was on him. It's like he was trying to play it off as, oh, that's no big deal. But you could tell deep down he was like, uh-oh.
Lyle tries to reel him in. Lyle slightly ahead and looks over and says, I'm still the world champion. And a little bit of a push there at the end as the rivalry comes into view.
He's still the man. And you better believe he's going to stop the building in Tokyo because he's only run 1988. It's to make sure that he asserts his dominance. Oh, boy.
This is gonna be bad. So that to me, because I'm not a Noah Lyles fan. If you listen to our other podcast, you know that the cockiness. But I mean, that's just sprinters, right? It seems like the shorter the distance, the more cocky they get, and the longer the distance, marathon, great group of people. So, but yeah,
same thing.
Go back and look at the footage of Noah Lyles when Kung Fu Kenny won. The minute he won the race, the second he won the race, it was classic.
Yeah.
It's the same thing on a football field. The further you get away from the snapping of the football, the more cocky the player.
Never heard that. Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
All right, next three storylines here. Shelby Houlihan wins the 5K. Number two, Cole Hocker, the Olympic champ in the 1500, comes in third in the U.S. this time around in the 1500, but comes back to win the 5K at the track trials in what I thought was just, I loved it. I love Cole Hocker, but I love the race there. Or a third headline here, everyone's favorite, Grant Fisher, comes in second in both the 5K and the 10K. Dean, tell us which one is the most interesting.
I wasn't surprised when the race went out slow that Cole Hocker won the 1500, won the 5000, just because he made the comment after the 1500. I know he got third, and I know people will look at this comment as crazy, but he said after that 1500, he said that was one of the easiest 1500s I've ever run. He just, for some reason, it didn't feel like it taxed his body much. So when the race went out slow, it was like, Hocker's going to win this thing. And then when it was slow through 2 miles, you knew there was a really good chance he was going to win it. I was really surprised that, going back to the your third one, Grant Fisher, I was really surprised that Grant Fisher didn't take the lead with a mile or three laps to go to try to wear that kick out of him, because I think he would have had he done that, but he chose not to. And I think maybe he was being cautious because he just wanted to make sure he made the world championship team, and he thought it was safer not to do that because he saw what happened in the 10,000. And so I think that was it. But the most, I think the best storyline here is Shelby Houlihan. Shelby Houlihan, for those who don't know, was suspended because she tested positive for a banned substance. Her story was she ate a burrito. I don't know that. Some people believe that. I don't know that we should, but Shelby, coming back from that, she has been very under the radar. She has been very calm. She has been humble about everything. And she just came back and she's done her talking on the track. And she winning the 5K was impressive because Josette Andrews had just really dusted her pretty well just a few weeks ago in one of the Diamond League meets. And she beat Josette Norris, who should have been our best 5K runner. So that was an impressive feat by Shelby. And I like to give people a second chance, you know, second chance only. You don't get a third. She tests positive again. I'm done with her. I hope she never comes back to the sport, but I hope she's clean now.
I was just going to ask, did she eat another burrito before this race? That's what we need to know.
I like that. That's where you and I differ, Dean. And that's where I have such a hard time on the Shelby story, because she was my favorite female runner when this went down 4 years ago. I just love the way she competes and her demeanor. And she's got this devastating kick that you better run it out of her because you're not going to beat her to the line. And so this race showed it again, how devastating that kick can be for her. When she come around the third corner of the last lap, she just had a different pop in her legs. She wasn't in first yet, but she was going to take it. You just knew it at that point in time. And so any other runner out there, whether it be an American sprinter or a Kenyan distance runner or whatever, if you test positive for me one time, I'm done with you forever. Like, no chance. But I like Shelby, so I have such a hard time with it. So it's tough.
I get it. Checks and balances, though, especially for athletes who have failed previously. Like, there's got to be extra layer of protection there, I would hope.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. We could spend a lot of time on drug testing and state of the sport. And, you know, we talked about Ruth Chepngetich a couple weeks ago, who gets caught with a masking agent. Didn't even get caught with what she was actually tested, what she was trying to mask. We don't even know. No one knows, but they're so good at avoiding these things.
Yeah.
And so there's that. So, let me give you one more headline, and I'm going to zoom through this one. Cause we got to get back to the main topic here, but, I thought the number one storyline of the weekend was, Donovan Brazier, a guy coming back to the 800 after a few years off with some injuries and disappointments, and just a guy that you felt for. He didn't make an Olympic team once when you thought he was probably the best in the world. Just a tough, tough situation with him. He comes back to the U.S. Track and Field Championships and wins. In and of itself, one of the best stories of track and field championships. And it's not even the story of that race. The story of the race is Cooper Luttenhaus, a 16-year-old from Texas, walks down some of the best 800 runners that America's ever developed in the final straightaway to finish second with a 1:42.2. It's mind-blowing how fast that is. And the way he finished that race, he's 16. He's going into his junior year of high school. I can't even fathom, you know, how that even happens. Dean, real quick, any thoughts?
Well, I know most people don't realize the significance of that. I know that you do, but here's a good way. I was trying to think, how do you put this in perspective? And here's how I put it in perspective. You think of all the high school track meets that have been run over all the years that it's been run in this country. Tens of thousands of track meets run every single year, and every one of them has an 800 meters in it. And of all of those guys that have ever run the 800 meters in all of those races, he has run 4 seconds faster than the next fastest guy.
Wow.
I mean, that's incredible. He had just broken a record that was out there for 29 years because it was so good. And now he cuts 3 more seconds off of that time. It's incredible.
4th fastest American, I think. Is that what I saw ever?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yep. Just
and he's 16. It's not a high school senior would be one thing. You know, Jim Ryan was famous. I mean, he beat the Olympic champion in the 1500 meters when he was a senior in high school. That was an incredible feat. But when you look at it in comparison to what Cooper Luttenhaus just did, and then take into account he's 2 years younger, it's mind blowing what this guy's ceiling is.
Yeah, what a great, amazing story there.
And the thing about Cooper that I love, because I'm a Cooper fan now, is he goes against what I just said. He is opposite Noah Lyles. If you watch his interviews, the most humble, down to earth, grounded person. So I'm officially a fan just because of his interviews. I mean, obviously because of his running, but just the kind of kid that he seems to be. I hope that doesn't change.
Me too.
That's such a great point. And if you just stuck a microphone in front of me as a 16-year-old after a great race, my parents would have been like, I don't know about I said that. But, you know, last thing before we move on from the U.S. Championships, I mentioned a couple names from some on runners and some Puma runners. Josette Andrews, on runner, finished third in the 5K. Taylor Rowe, Puma runner, finished third in the 10K. Claire, anything you want to say about that?
All I have to say is I bet Cooper was not wearing Puma or On Clouds either.
Oh, that, I mean, sure. That's probably right. I think he had a Nike top on anyway. So
that's hurtful. That's hurtful.
I know. I'm sorry. Don't come for me. I might cut that out, but my feelings are strong.
The second fastest miler in history wears on shoes. That's all I'll have to say.
I tried a pair on Saturday, and one, they made my feet look weird. I wasn't a fan. And two, it was just I needed to do more. So stay tuned. More market research coming. I'm proud of these athletes. Don't seriously get me wrong. Like, good for you, but it couldn't be me.
There we go. All right, moving into our main segment here. Today we're talking about core training principles, and specifically core training principles of what we do here at Upward Running. And hey, if we're gonna have Dean and Mitchell on the podcast, let's dive into what these core principles are.
Yeah, so you guys have five main principles that are kind of intertwined within every single one of our training plans at Upward Running. So I'm going to throw the first one out and tell us what you mean and how runners anywhere can kind of apply this to their training. Number one, consistency is key. Mitchell, tell me more about that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this one stands head and shoulders above the other four. But this applies to our training, but this applies to our life as well, right? You know, nutrition, staying in the Word every day. Consistency is where the magic happens. You know, as athletes, especially runners, I would probably put cyclists up there about with runners. They like to get into the weeds of the gear. I mean, you guys were just talking about On Cloud and my eyes roll back when I start hearing those things. But we like to get in the weeds on gear, argue about workout principles, shoes. But one of the questions I like to ask people is, but did you get your workouts in? And they'll say, well, you know, I missed two of them. And I'm like, well, there's only three for the week. So to me, you know, you can't make up missing workouts with training principles, you can't make it up with anything else. It's the most important thing. Even if you don't hit your targeted workouts, getting the workout in and doing it consistently is by far the most important thing you can do.
Yep.
Great.
Yep. And that builds over time, right, Dean?
Yes, yes. I mean, there's a reason why I run every day. I know a lot of people, and I'm not advocating that other people do run every day, but for me, it works well. And that consistency, whenever I get a little problem, a little, you know, something starts to hurt a little bit, I'm able to run through it a lot better than most people are. And I think it's just because my body is used to just going through those things. And I think, and it all goes back to that word, consistency.
Yep. I've had coaches tell me it's just a compounding effect. Similar to money, you know, compounding effect of money. It just keeps building on itself and you get more and more gains on it over time. It's one of the things with my injuries over the past few years that I feel like probably has held me back a little bit is because I've had these gaps in my training because of injuries that I wish wasn't the case, but it has been for me. And so I hope moving forward, I won't have those and I can continue to stay consistent there. Let's move on to the second principle. Dean, I'll come to you on this one. Every run has a purpose and a goal. What do you mean?
This is really super. This is, you got them in the right order here, Travis, because I think this is the next most important thing is to understand that every run is, there should be a goal with every day. We have our overall goals. We have a race that we want to reach for, and we want to run a such and such marathon or a 5K, whatever it is. But every day there should be a goal at the end of that day. And much of running goes back to the ability for our body to produce and process energy. This is kind of the guts. Back to what Mitchell was talking about, the science of things. We do that. The energy that our muscles use to work is mitochondria. That's where it comes from. It's called the powerhouse of the cell for a reason. You probably heard that phrase before. There are basically two ways to improve the way that your mitochondria work biologically. And one of those is to produce more mitochondria. We do that through what you guys, I think, talked about a few weeks ago with zone two running. That easy running is the way that you build more mitochondria. It's like multiplying the mitochondria. That doesn't happen when you run fast and when you run too hard. It only happens when you run easy. And then the second thing is to increase the number of pathways that mitochondria has to get to those muscles to provide the energy you need. And the way you do that is by running fast. You got to have both in order to get better and to get faster and to maximize your ability. So most people run their slow runs too fast and they run or too hard rather, and their fast runs too easy. And if you can polarize those things and make sure your easy runs are easy and your hard runs are hard, it'll pay off in the long run. And that's where the goal of the day is, right? What are you trying to do?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just to kind of piggyback on what Dean said, you've got to be cognizant to give yourself some grace too sometimes, because you're not always going to hit that goal. And what we see too many times is somebody doesn't hit that speed or that pace or that goal for the day, and they think they've messed up their whole training plan. But it goes back to the consistency at that point. You get up the next day or 2 days later, or whenever your next workout is, and you kind of blot that out of your mind. If you didn't hit it, give yourself some grace and move on.
Yeah, that's why I use the words easy and hard rather than fast or slow. It's not right. Running your easy runs too slow. It's running your easy runs too hard. It's the idea that effort is the thing that counts, not necessarily the pace and the speed.
Yeah. The body doesn't know what 6 minute pace means, but it knows what running pretty dang hard is.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And so that's what you're getting at there.
That's actually a really good segue into our point number three, which is recovery is where you improve. Now, with all of the hard running, you're going to need recovery. So, Mitchell, can you unpack that a little bit for us? What do you mean by recovery is where you improve?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't work just as hard on recovery as you do during your workouts, you're never going to see the gains. And this is where a lot of people, they don't really get it. You know, speed and strength are built during rest, and the workouts simply prepare the process. I call it do all the things. You know, I used to, when we coached some triathletes several years back, I said, do all the things every day when we got done with practice. You know, everybody has their own things. It may be an ice bath. It may be compression socks. It may be going home and putting your feet up. It may be getting an extra hours of sleep during the night. But do all the things, go home and work just as hard on the recovery, because that's where the gains are actually built. We tear our body down when we're out there doing the workout. When we're doing those 12 by 400s or whatever it is we're doing, we're destroying our body. And if we're not giving ourselves the opportunity to properly recover, we're going to be run down all the time, and we're not going to see any of the gains. So you've got to, you know, some people like to say pamper yourself. And that's really is what it is. You got to put yourself in situations to really promote that recovery. Because if you get done with a workout and then you just, you know, go stay on your feet for the rest of the day and you get, you know, 5 hours of sleep at night, you're just not going to get recovered. And that's where all your gains are built.
I'm going to go and tell my husband that. Be like, hey, I got to pamper myself. I got to recover.
which includes sleep. Sleep is a very important factor in there.
Yeah. Good sleep. I like the pamper. I like the pamper part. Maybe a massage. You know?
That's good stuff.
Just kidding. Halfway.
I think one thing to note here too, it also includes your recovery running days. Like those are on purpose. Like the one we talked about before, every day have a plan and a goal. And so a lot of those times the plan and goal is nice and easy running to get blood flow pumping so that you can repair the muscles that were damaged during a harder or longer run and therefore be ready for more hard work in the future.
Absolutely. And it includes your nutrition too, the things that you eat and when you eat it.
Yeah. Well balanced, right? We want all types of macros when we're eating to help recover.
That's right.
Wait, so that means I shouldn't be eating my dino nuggets at midnight. Is that what you just
said?
That
is correct.
Oh, no. I'm logging out.
You'll get Mitchell talking about his sleep scores that dwarf all of ours if you start into the late night eating part.
Oh, man. Nothing beats a midnight dino nugget. I'm just saying. Don't knock it until you try.
That is.
I don't either.
You don't know what a dino nugget is?
No.
Okay.
What is it?
All right. Next time you're here, I'm making us all dino nuggets in the air fryer.
Kids' chicken nuggets. That's what it is. Our fourth principle, volume matters. What does that mean, Dean?
Well, a lot. You see all these things online that says you can run your best marathon on 20 miles a week. And it's not true. You have to get in volume. Now, volume means different things because, for example, Mitchell and I used to coach triathlon team. For them, volume is a different thing than somebody who's strictly a runner. For a runner to run a really good marathon, you probably need to run 50 or 60 miles a week if you're really, really competitive and really want to do well. But a triathlete can get by on 25 miles a week because they're getting in some of their volume on the bike and in the swim. But you have to do the work. You have to spend hours doing it or you're not going to get there. And so many people believe the hype and the shortcuts that they read about. And those things are not true. It is true that there are a few people. Parker Valby is a good example of somebody who has been very successful in running scene on very few miles. That is the exception. That is not the rule. And you can't force yourself into that either. Most people are going to require some work to be done. And that volume could also include strength work and things like that as well.
I know, Mitchell, you've talked about your son, Lane, who was a collegiate runner. Yeah. And he seemed to do best when he was both biking and running to get that volume in. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those kids that, I mean, if he started getting up 50-plus miles a week, he was going to injure something. But, I mean, and so Lane, to Dean's point, he would do best on 30 miles a week, you know, being, you know, at the top of his age group in the country. But he was also, you know, biking a couple hundred miles a week. So he was getting the aerobic engine work in. He just wasn't doing it in the form of running. And that helped, you know, stay off some of those injuries for him. But there are other people, I mean, other people that Lane used to train with and race with, I mean, they would still be running 60, 70 miles a week and the biking and the running. But so to Dean's point, everybody, high volume means a lot of things to a lot of people. But to his point, you're not going to do your best. Just ignore some of these headlines that you see out there that said, do your best on 10 miles a week. You're going to have to work.
Yeah. And it is important to understand that when we say volume matters in both ways. It matters because you've got to do a lot of work to get done what you have to do, but there is a limit. There is the law of diminishing returns at some point. Sure. And that point is different for everybody. You got to find it. The only way you can find it is through experimentation, really. And you got to find where that is. For me, that line is somewhere between 60 and 70 miles. For Lane, that line is probably somewhere around 45 or 50 miles. And there's nothing wrong with it. Neither one is right or wrong. It's just how we are. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it might be 45 to 48 or something on the high end. For me, I've noticed my last two injuries came when I got into 55 to 57. So I've pulled it down for this training cycle I'm in to be 45 to 48 on these up weeks. And so far, so good on that. Before we leave this topic, Dean, this also goes with the principle of consistency and doing this over time and getting the volume in over time and building that over time. If someone was building their volume from, say, 20 miles a week that they're at today, what's a rule of thumb to consider to make sure they don't do too much too fast, too soon, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. The rule of thumb is 10% per week. You don't want to increase your mileage by more than 10% a week. So if somebody asks me, if they're running 20 miles a week and they want to get to 40 miles a week, I will give them a plan that will increase their mileage at about 10% for 3 weeks. Take a week where you cut back maybe 10 to 20% from their high, and then go back that next week and then keep building 10% for another 3 weeks and then another down week. So three of every 4 weeks, you increase 10%.
Good stuff. All right. Now, Claire, fifth principle.
Okay. Our fifth and final principle is you can do it. We can help. You guys have helped hundreds of athletes overcome obstacles and cross finish lines that they never thought that they could. They didn't think they were possible. So you did this from You Can Do It, We Can Help. What do you mean here?
Yeah, I think, you know, we live in a society just like Dean was talking a while ago, where we see headlines and you can do this. And we've got in the day of Google, you can Google almost anything. And what we, Dean and I, are kind of known for saying is submit yourself to a plan. And it doesn't have to be our plan. We hope it is our plan. I've always said there's 100 different ways to get a training plan to run, say, a sub-4-hour marathon or a sub-3-hour marathon. There's hundreds of different ways to do that, but you got to pick one and go with it. The problem we see with a lot of people nowadays is they They'll download this plan and they'll say, okay, I like that and that. And then they'll download this plan and they'll say, I like that and that. Not giving any thought to the rationale behind the periodization, where the workouts are placed. They just start picking and choosing which workouts that they like. Well, you know, if I pick the workouts that I liked, I would have zero tempo runs in any training plan. But the point of that is you can do it. Almost anybody can either run their first 5K. Almost anybody can run a marathon. We can help. We have a plan that is safe, number one. It's realistic, number two. And pretty much, especially our beginner plans, pretty much anybody can do it. And we're there to help. So the bottom line is find a plan and submit yourself to it and commit to it. And don't try to cherry pick from here and there.
Mm-hmm. That's great. All right, before we close out this section here, since Mitchell's here, running director, let me ask you this question a little different way than I asked previously. We've been talking about training principles, but what would you say are the cornerstone principles of who Upward Running is as an organization?
I mean, obviously, number one is shining Jesus through the sport of running. If you come into our club or you take any of our programming, at some point you're going to be exposed to the gospel, and we're unashamed of that. Probably number two is the community building in the sport of running. You know, we've hosted a lot of events through the years, and it really always amazes me. Travis, you were part of the last one we did where we'll pass the microphone around to a group of people in a room, and it's amazing how little running is discussed. And the phrase we hear most is there's a lot more than running going on here. And it's the connections that are made from all across the country, from people who would not ordinarily become friends. I mean, you've got young and old, male and female from all over the country, in the past, even all over the world. And the only thing that's tying them together is this sport that we love and a love for Jesus Christ. And then the third principle is, and we've already talked about it a little bit, is taking the I can'ts and turning them into the I dids. And these are my people here. These are the people who they come into this ministry, maybe a little bit sheepish, and they're like, you know, I don't know if I can do this. Even in Claire mentioned the 5K challenge church model, you know, to see those people the first 9 weeks, our first 8 weeks of our program is walk and run. And so the last week you've got, or week eight, you have 5 minutes of running two different times. I'm sorry, 8 minutes of running two different times. But then the next week is 20 minutes of continuous running. And how many people come in and they say, I can't do this. There's no way I'm going to be able to complete tonight's workout. And this is the week where the magic happens. You go out and they do that 20-minute run. 8 times out of 10, they come back in the church or wherever you're meeting at, and they're crying. And they say, I can't believe I just did that. And that's where this ministry becomes so infectious, is because you see somebody transform right before your eyes. And it's the coolest thing. So it's shining Jesus through the sport of running. It's the community building and taking those I can'ts and turning them into I just did.
That's awesome. I love what we are building here with Upward Running and what you guys have done in the past. I mean, Mitchell, you've talked about probably over 200,000 people have gone through the 5K challenge since you started this thing in the beginning. So it's a great, great thing we got going. Hope people join us for it as we move forward. At this point, let's move into our week in training as we close this thing out. Claire, you are still on the mend here. Are you back running yet?
I did a run yesterday. Okay. Not very far, not very fast. My heart rate is just wacko. I was sitting, literally, I've been sitting on the couch and my resting heart rate has been 100. My normal is 53. So you can imagine what that was yesterday. Oh, my, I quit my little 2 mile run, but I'm going to attempt 5 miles today. And if it happens, great. But if I need to stop because of my heart rate, that's okay too.
Dean, anything you want to coach her up on this coming back from being sick?
No, you just got to be careful. You do want to you do want to make sure that heart rate stays down low. Make sure you stay hydrated. Is that not a problem for you? Good.
Big water bottle. Yep, absolutely. Dean, we follow each other on Strava. We got the upward running Strava group. Both of us, actually, and Claire, normally in the top 10 of that on a weekly basis. Looked like you had a great week last week. Where are you at on training these days?
Yeah, I couldn't believe last week it went as well as it did. I had a really good long run this past weekend. I'm training for a 5K in October. Same day that I think it's the same day that you're doing your marathon. I'm going to be running a 5K in Atlanta. It's the U.S. Masters Championship for Road 5K. And so I turn 60 next month. And so my goal, I'll be in a new age group. I should be one of the faster ones in the age group. And so I'm looking forward to trying to see if I can beat all those other 60 to 64 year olds.
You'll be the young one in the group.
That's right.
At 60. Yeah.
That's right.
So let's throw out a time you want or a range of a time, whatever you feel comfortable with at this point in time. But what's it going to take to win the national championships in that age group? What do you think?
I think it's going to take somewhere between 1730 and 1745. And so that's my goal is I believe that I can get down to 1740-ish or better. So that's my goal.
Speedy.
Very much so. I think that's still in me at some point in time as an adult, but I haven't broke 18 yet. I'm mid 18s at this point. So we'll see how that goes. Mitchell, what are you doing for training these days?
Yeah. So, you know, the past few years I've kind of been the guinea pig, trying different things, new things. When we opened up Upward Running Run for God to walkers, I walked a marathon. We tested the training principles of running and we found out that they do work for walkers. And it's funny, Dean just sent me an article about that, but I'm kind of doing the same thing now with the sport of rucking. If you don't know what rucking is, it's simply just walking with weight on your back. I throw 55 pounds in a backpack and take off walking. And, you know, I'm kind of kicking around, maybe doing a marathon with a rucksack. The million-dollar question is how much weight is going to be in that rucksack. I don't think 55 pounds is feasible at this point. But yeah, I'm doing a little bit of running, a little bit of walking, and a lot of rucking right now.
I think a 10K feels like the most you could possibly do with that kind of weight.
I did a 7.5 a couple weeks ago. And it was in the middle of the day in Florida, and it was miserable. But it was great. You know, it's one of those things you all are just like me in this way. It's horrible, but you get done and you're like, when can I do it again?
That's great. All right. So for me this week, it's right in the meat of my marathon training. Like I feel like we're turning the page of going from some strength building into some actual work. So I've got a track workout today we'll get the legs turning over pretty good there. But what my mind is really on at this point is my first 20 miler of the build is coming up Saturday, and there is some pace work in it. I think I'm doing 4 by 2 miles within it at marathon pace. So big week for me, and you're just a week removed from being sick too. So hopefully all goes well. But I'm feeling good, feeling like I'm over the sickness at this point. All right, let's close this thing out. Claire, this is what you normally handle here. Are you good to do that today?
Yeah, let's do it. So, Kind of Fast listeners, we hope that you have enjoyed our discussion with Coach Dean and Mitchell and, of course, Travis. It has been fun for me to get the gang all here today, and it also really helps to put faces with names. So I hope you've enjoyed this as much as I have. Don't forget that this podcast is powered by Upward Running, where Mitchell, Dean, and I are all very intertwined intertwined in the community, reaching out to you guys, checking in, seeing how you're doing. Upward Running truly is a community built to help you run with purpose, stay motivated, and find your people. As always, this journey is more than miles. God is in every step. The good runs, the bad runs, the sick runs, the healthy runs, the quiet moments, it all matters to Him. He is with you, He is for you, and He is using this season to grow something deeper inside of you.
At Upward Running, this is where faith and fitness meet, and we'd love to run with you. Join us at upwardrunning.com/kindoffast. That's upwardrunning.com/kindoffast. And if you use the code KINDOFAST, you get 2 weeks free as you start off. And it'd be great for us to see that you came in via the podcast and hearing about it there. Next week, we'll be back with a new episode. And hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, please like, rate, subscribe, leave a review. That helps us out more than you know. So KINDOFAST team, keep showing up. Keep running your race, the one God has marked out just for you. See ya.
Holla.
Good job, Claire. Good job, Travis. And good job, thing. Oh, I get it now. The shape of the dinosaur.
That's yeah, right.
Yeah.
I got you.
Someone's going to comment and be like, I like Diner Nuggets too. All right. That's a wrap.